On today's episode of Rise, Grind, Repeat, we talk to Ivo Terra. Being one of the pioneers of podcasting, we discuss his journey to where he's at today. Let's dive right in. Ivo, thank you so much for joining on another episode of Rise, Grind, Repeat. Excited for this, mainly because you help a lot of businesses with podcasts, and obviously we have a podcast and see the power of it, but excited to hear more about your journey in entrepreneurship and really how your company helps businesses start and get their podcast going. Maybe get some tips for those that are on the verge of starting their own, and just hear and learn more about you.
Great, Dustin. Thank you very much for having me on the program. Lots of things that I'm happy to share and talk about. Podcasting's kind of my life, and it has been a big part of my life since back in 2004 when I had the 40th podcast ever, which is crazy to even think about. But that's how long I've been doing this, and it's what I do full time. So yeah, let's have the conversation.
Love it. Well, before you got into podcasting, I guess, how did you get started on your journey to entrepreneurship?
It's like many people, never a planned road. Yep. These people of my generation, you know, it just sort of happened as things were going on. My first real taste of entrepreneurism, other than some, you know, dabbling with things when I was a kid, came when I was in Los Angeles and working a full-time job. But this guy who I'd encountered on a regular basis kept talking about all this really cool things happening on the internet. And so I kind of jumped along with him and taught myself. Well, what I thought I taught myself was web design. Now I know that was not what I taught myself at all. I taught myself how to hack HTML, which is a very, very different thing altogether. So that's how it began. I was doing that, and I was facing a crossroads. What do I want to do with my life? Do I want to go, because it's the 90s, do I want to go in this internet direction, which there was a lot of opportunities there, or do I want to kind of double down on my career with this company? And at the time, I chose to double down on the career with the company, and that got me here to Phoenix, Arizona. I was at the corporate office working in the C-suite, doing all the great things, but really not what I wanted to do. I mean, I was doing the corporate grind thing, and I love the people who do the corporate grind thing. We need people to do the corporate grind thing, but it just wasn't me. And at the time, as a hobby, I got into this thing called podcasting. First started as internet radio and then became podcasting. And at some point in time, I said, you know, I really rather like doing this than that. So I quit. And that kind of set me off on the journey of where I go. And from there, that became, all right, so I have this side hustle called podcasting while I'm also going to be running digital advertising agencies on the other side of that. So, what, you know, my job would fund my hobby and then find a way to blend those two things together. Yeah, that's the beginning of the road. And it's a never ending twisting road with no end in sight.
No, hear you on that. And I mean, that's the beauty of the internet, is it allows people to start their own side hustle. And if it turns into something more, you can make that transition. But I mean, you know, back when the internet started, it was, you know, highly considered a fad. And so, I mean, you were definitely an early adopter. And I mean, what types of opportunities did you find online? I mean, you have a lot of people that push back, and it's almost like you have to convince someone that there is opportunity in either growing their brand or that commerce can be done online. So, I mean, how did you navigate that? And I'm sure that having the full-time job helped.
Yeah, it really did. But it was a constant battle. I mean, here's at the time, I was this young kid up in the C-suite getting these older dudes to really push forward on this idea that this internet thing is not a fad, and that, yeah, we actually can sell goods and services online. You know, we started doing this back in 1999. We were pushing these big physical products, which you can't install at home. I'm purposely not talking about the company. They might be based in Arizona, and they might be a tire manufacturer, a tire retailer, but I'm not saying that out loud. So yeah, just trying to get them to realize that e-commerce is going to be a thing. I know we have all these stores that do most of the sales through them, and we want to keep supporting them, but there's a way to do both. There's a way to do both of these things. And a large part of the executive team got it, but a large part of the executive team either didn't get it or didn't care about it because they were making money hand over fist. And so why do this big thing? So, you know, that's always the challenge in that in anything online. The same challenges presented themselves when I was running digital advertising agencies, trying to convince clients, you know, large clients, multinational clients, to spend more money online, to shift money away from print and television into the space where people are spending their time more. And it's a constant struggle. But the good news is, for everyone that doesn't get it, there's a dozen that do.
Yeah.
And we're looking for someone to really do it right. So I don't spend my time. Luckily, I'm not in sales. I've never really been in sales. It's more of just taking the right opportunities and making sure that you can do the best with the client's money.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, even still today, there's quite a bit that's spent on traditional compared to digital, and those conversations or persuading or whatever it may be are still happening, which is crazy. But I think one thing you hit the nail on the head with is when things are good and you're making money hand over fist, kind of lack innovation. And I think a big push over the last 12 months, you know, since coronavirus came in, is it's expedited the digital transformation and getting more businesses to lean into technology, automation, all of that stuff. Because when things are good, you're not wanting to do this big change. It's all unknown and it's never fun to go through. But, you know, I've said it a couple times, but the thing I can appreciate about what's happened through the pandemic and everything is it's forced people to change, get creative, change yeah. business models. And I think a lot of innovation and creativity has come up from it, and largely sparked because of the internet and how quickly things can be done, how you can communicate, even more so just operating a business in general, the fact that you can have discussions and everything digitally.
Yeah. You know, 20 years ago, it was all about what can we do with the internet? But today, it's what are our customers demanding we do in this new digital world that we live in? I mean, forget the internet. I mean, everything in our lives is connected and digital right now. And it's no longer a choice. And it hasn't been a choice for a long time. But now customers are realizing it and waking up, or companies are waking up to the reality that, especially after the pandemic we've just went through, when we were all forced to do a lot more things, distance, remote, through the internet, through the web, through digital devices than we ever have before, customers kind of liked that. And that's, while they hated much of the pandemic, don't get me wrong, they found a lot of efficiencies.
Mm-hmm.
And now every business, I don't care what business you're in, you're being judged by your customers based not against your peers, other people who do the same thing you do, but against every other digital interaction they have. So that's the real challenge. Businesses now have to do this. They have to wake up to the fact that this customer experience is a key thing. I'm harping on customer experience because we just launched on Monday of this week, we just launched this gigantic podcast for SAP Customer Experience, where we went out and interviewed 20 different high-end CX, C-suite level executives and thought leaders around what the future of digital customer experience is going to look like. And it's still fresh in my brain because we just put that gigantic podcast out there. But everything they say is totally true. I mean, there is just this overwhelming need from people for businesses to do better. They want better experiences, and they're going to reward the ones that are providing that to them.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, everyone just wants less friction in whatever it is that they want to buy, whether it's the research, the actual purchase part. And that's all digital does, is it reduces the amount of friction to give the customer consumer what it is that they actually want. And so I think, yeah, both consumers and businesses are realizing. I mean, I've had conversations that, you know, have a whole agency that's out of the office, and it's like, well, we're paying $100,000 a month in rent. No one's here.
Yeah.
And we're still operating, you know, kind of where we were. Yeah. I mean, and I think there's a lot of realizations that are happening. And I think what excites me and you know, how we kind of found you is the whole podcast aspect of it. I think it's very undervalued in most businesses. It's almost, in terms of channels, it's almost like the internet, where it's just people don't realize the value. And I'm big on it because it doesn't take as much time to produce as video. It's people get it better than blogs or written word. And I think there's a lot that is said about the podcast side. So I'd love to hear, how did you get into podcasting, especially so early? Was it more of a hobby? Did you see opportunity? A little bit of both?
Yeah, a little bit of both. We were actually doing an internet radio show way back in the day, like in 2002. My partner and I were doing this dumb internet radio show just for fun more than anything else. And then a couple of years later, when podcasting hit, we were very fortunate that we had several hundred episodes of our show done. We had a blog. We had people listening to this internet radio show all over the world the hard way, clicking through on the real media player on the website, and a handful of stations we got syndicated on. So for us, making the transition to podcasting was, well, it took me cracking open the blog CMS and faking this little thing called an enclosure tag with my very, very limited CIS skills. That was it. That set the the path in motion. And then being that early in the process, I had the opportunity to write Podcasting for Dummies, the first edition, which came out in 2005. And that just sort of made everything move forward. I had a business where we were trying to and succeeded in helping independent authors, or I should say underpublished authors, reach an audience with their published book. This was before Amazon had Kindles. This is back when Amazon sold physical things, not just digital goods. And we were helping them make their audiobooks into serialized podcasts that they would narrate and read. And we had like 700 of those out at one time, wow, pushing around two million downloads a month. So it was that was a blast really doing that. But then that business model changed big time because suddenly Audible says, you know what you can do, author? You can just push upload and make your book available for free or 99 cents, you know, with just your Word document. So that kind of changed the picture. So I'd been in the podcasting space for, again, since the beginning, watched a lot of my friends jump into the consulting space right away and start charging money and start making a really good living doing that. But I always kind of held off. I held off because, I mean, honestly, other than being in it for the longest time, and yeah, I wrote Podcasting for Dummies and a few other books in podcasting, who am I to tell some individual person what they should or should not do with their creative hobby? It's not like anybody's making money with podcasting. That was back in the day. Well, fast forward to, you know, 2014, 2015, and suddenly businesses are starting to look at podcasting the same way they started looking at social media 10 years before that, and 10 years before that, just getting on, getting a web page up because no one's picking up those yellow pages that sit out by the mailboxes anymore. So it's the same kind of thing. You know, 20 years later, it's the new thing businesses are getting into. And I looked back at my career saying, well, you know, I've ran digital advertising agencies. And Dustin, as you know, companies are very happy to pay agencies to do things so that the company doesn't have to learn how to do that thing.
Yep.
So I said, well, maybe there are businesses out there that want to pay someone to make a podcast. And if they're going to pay somebody, they might as well pay me so they actually get a good one. So that's when I launched Simpler Media. I was living in Bangkok, Thailand at the time, semi-retired, doing some modeling type stuff, which was weird. and I know, totally insane. So I launched the company to really start making businesses, podcasts for businesses. Again, that was in 2016. And here we are in 2021. I've got, you know, big companies like SAP as a client. We're making really amazing, immersive, great, deep experiences and podcasts that take literally months to put together. This last one took almost a year to actually get it out. It's serious production level work, but it's so rewarding because we're putting content out there that really resonate with people. And also, the most important thing is that drives business outcomes. There's a reason for doing it now and doing it the right way possible.
I love that you said that, because it's and that's how we're trying to kind of position our agency. Is not, we do SEO, we do video, we don't do services. We help try and achieve outcomes, and whether that's acquiring new customers, lifetime value, whatever that may be. But I think again, you hit the nail on the head. Is people are realizing that it's not just getting in front of a mic and talking. It's a way to educate your consumer in a way that's more penetrable than other channels, essentially. And I think it does achieve those business outcomes. And I think once you can start to articulate or show the ROI of anything, that's when you start getting more buy-in and more companies start doing it. So, I mean, you were definitely ahead of the game. And I mean, have you always, it seems like you help, do you help in the remote sense, or is it all in a studio, basically here in the Valley?
Oh no, almost everything is remote. I mean, I used to have one client here in the Valley, and he moved to California. He's still my client, but he's no longer here in the Valley. No, I have clients overseas. You know, and that's the great thing about podcasting is, you know, even for the time I've been involved with it since 2004, I think the most of these episodes I've ever recorded with my host or partners or whatever has all been done remotely. You know, there's just, it's available now. It's been available for 20 years, and now it's even more available. We have all these tools at our disposal, which allow us to connect and interface with people. There's no need for the physical proximity. Sometimes we have to do things physically. You know, if we're recording a roundtable discussion of people and it's actually physical, then we need to go on location with shotgun mics and pick all of that stuff up like you would for any other production. But for the vast majority of work that we do, it's all done remotely. You don't know that. The listener will never know that's the case, because it all sounds like we were in the same room together. That's the ultimate goal.
And I mean, how do you achieve that? Because I mean, it's tough when, you know, someone in Canada, all they have is a computer. Do you guys help with the all right, here's the equipment. Basically, here's the equipment you need to get. Here's a checklist.
We'll ship the equipment straight out to them. Yeah,
that's awesome.
If, depending on what the level of need is, a lot of people, again, it's been a year of having to have conversations like this. So more and more people are recognizing the fact that maybe I should sound and look a little bit better.
Yep.
So they're upgrading their equipment. So a lot of people have really good equipment, but many don't. So when we are doing a remote recording session, when we're engineering remotely, oftentimes we will ship out a box, and that box gets to them, and they unpack it. It's got instructions inside. We get everything plugged in. We have a remote engineer on the call 30 minutes before the recording session begins to make sure everything sounds as good as we possibly can, getting to do things like turn off your air conditioner, or maybe you should move away from the window, or the kitchen is not really the greatest place to do all this. So we'll help coach them through that. But then the real work becomes after that. After the mm-hmm. interview or recording session is done, we spend a lot of time in post-production cleaning up those audio files so that it doesn't sound like it was recorded over the internet. Again, it sounds like it was recorded in a professional studio.
No, that's awesome. And I think the offering is just amazing. And the fact that you've been doing it for so long, well ahead of just pandemic times, I think is huge. You definitely see the vision, the opportunity that is there. And I think more businesses are seeing it as well. And I'm sure you're getting busier. And with that being said, I talk to a lot of people. They ask about our podcast. How do you do it? And I think a lot of the barrier to getting things going is, well, what do I talk about?
Yeah.
I see that you kind of do help with that in a sense. And so for an entrepreneur or a business, I see the value. I just don't know what it is I want to talk about. How do you guys go through that process or help ideate maybe different segments or what the overall topics should be, again, that are going to lead to that ultimate outcome that you're looking to do, which is either drive new customers, keep employee retention, whether it's an internal podcast. How do you guys go about that?
Yeah. And it all starts with those questions of what are you trying to achieve? What is the business outcome you're looking for? Outputs are easy. Don't stop thinking about how many downloads am I going to get and what platform. None of that matters. None of that matters. What matters is your business outcome. So that's where the conversation begins. And then after that, it really, if people listening to this right now have ever done any type of content marketing, I've got a secret for you. That's all podcasting is. It's content marketing. We're making content. So if you don't know what to say on a podcast, would you know what to say if you were to write a book? And that's oftentimes where I'll start with a client is, if instead of podcasting, if you were thinking of having your business write a book, what would the chapters of that book be? What would the outline look like? What's the outcome you're trying to get with having that book? Why is the book on the marketplace? And that typically gets somebody thinking about it in a different light. Then they're not thinking about, oh, I have to do this thing week after week after week. No, that's not what podcasting has to be. A lot of podcasts are that way. Mm-hmm. Heck, my podcast goes out 4 days a week, which is insane.
Wow, that is insane.
Think about it. It is insane. Yes, it is. Think about it more from a self-contained format. You're going to do this. It's going to have a beginning and a middle and an end. There's a story you're trying to tell. What is that story? Is it the story of your brand? Is it the story of your thought leadership? Is it the showcasing why your people are so amazing and special? Great. Don't think about it from a podcast point of view. Think about content. We're going to build content for this. How could we go through and do that? And from there, of course, there's a lot of workshopping and writing down ideas and blasting things out. But it's a process that you have to go through. Like anything worth doing, it's a big process to get it all established. But what I try and tell my clients is, do not worry about the technology. We got the tech. The tech is handled. It is, look, when you sit down to write a book, no one worries about what typewriter they're going to buy or what font you should use in your book. That's not important. None of that is more. What's important is the content itself. So let's focus on that. Let's focus on building content in blocks and modules, whatever we need to do to make sure that we're telling the story that needs to be told to drive those business outcomes. And the tech and the how-to stuff, all that will take care of itself. Let's get the why figured out first.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of businesses that even struggle with that, small and large, on what is the why. And I mean, even then it's, okay, I want to tell our story. How have you seen the most successful podcast that you've helped with be done? What types of stories are being told? Is it that the business is interviewing their current clients or customers and talking about their experience? Is it more talking to internal employees and what is a day in the life like? Or what are some of the more successful types of topics or ways that companies are telling stories that are leading to those business results?
So the reality is this: format doesn't matter. Format is completely dependent on what it is you're trying to do. There are some very successful single person interviewing single person general chat casts, as we call them. Some of those are quite successful, but is that what your customers really want to listen to? If so, great. You should do that. Is it more of internal employees talking about the latest thing that's happening in the business and showing how smart they are for thought leadership? That can work really well. Is that what your customers or prospects or whoever it is want to listen to? If so, do that. So there really isn't a magic format that works. There's a lot of overused formats that work and a lot of underused formats that work. I mean, like, I'll go back to the show we just did for SAP. That was 20 different interviews. It's only 6 episodes long. So each episode has 5 to 10 voices inside of it. As we're telling this narrative story about what customer experience is like, it's a 6-part series that leads people through it. So it's great. It was a lot of work to put together, but each episode is self-contained. It tells its own story and it really works. I mean, it's the kind of thing you listen to and everybody learns something from. So what works is what works. What are you trying to achieve? What is going to be, what fits within the budget? There are a lot of factors that can go to it. But, you know, the great thing about podcasting is it's just an audio file. What that audio file is, it's up to us.
Yep. No, I agree. And I think one thing that they said that sticks out is, you know, there are overused and underused types of formats. And I mean, you mentioned the one with SAP. Are there any other underused formats that you can kind of speak to and I think help maybe spark the idea? Because I think another thing is everyone focuses on those overused and, oh, I don't want to be like everyone else. I don't think that format fits with my business. What are some of those underused formats that you're seeing?
I'll give you one because there's a lot we could talk about. I'll give you one. And it's, there's a lot of terms for this one, but I like to call it the hostless show. And the way it would work is like this. So let's say that you want to do an interview show, but you really want to make the interview more about the customer or the guest you're interviewing than it is you. And for a lot of businesses, that makes a lot of sense because it's more of a light touch branding and it's showcasing, hey, we're smart, but we want our guests to really show the smartness. So that guest can be a customer, that guest could be an employee, that whatever, that's up to you to figure it out. So you interview that, the people on your show, but then you cut yourself, the interviewer, out. 100%. You're totally and completely removed. It is just the person who you are interviewing, that's the only voice you hear on the show. Now, it takes some nice, some sound design to really make that truly work. It takes a lot of editing, and I don't mean audio editing. I mean editing in an editorial sense of the text to take the 30 minutes you interviewed someone and cut that down to the 10 minutes of really good sound bites that go along with that. And if it's done well with nice sound design all the way through, it becomes really compelling because you're just hearing one person say things. It also takes a lot of work from the interview standpoint in that you have to get people to repeat the question you asked in the answer. You know, no, yes, you know, look, 10 minutes of yes, no is not going to be exciting. So you want to make sure that they're, so you may have to ask them the same question 2 or 3 times to get it out and then weave them in together. But man, now you are suddenly inside of someone's head, what they're thinking about, why they do the things that they do. It's all showcasing around them. And maybe you have an announcer, if you will, at the beginning and the end to bracket the thing. But the main content is just one person speaking. Really a powerful vehicle for telling a story.
That's interesting. I've never seen that done before. I mean, just as an example, I'd love to see that. Do you have any examples of companies or a podcast where that was done? I mean, you don't have to say it now. I can follow up, but that would be, it'd be cool to hear that.
Follow up. But you know, it's stealing a play from radio. You know, radio has done this for a while. I mean, talking about real radio storytelling, not just, you know, talking head type yeah. stuff on radio. But, you know, the more deeper in-depth stuff, NPR does a lot of this, also BBC in the UK. They use these vehicles to tell much longer format stories where you're really engaged in what's going on. So, but yeah, I'll be happy to send you a couple of examples of that.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I think going about it, I think you're absolutely correct. What is the outcome? What does your audience want? And I think, again, that's one that a lot of businesses miss is what do you guys want to hear from or learn more about? And I think that could be great direction on once you know what your own customer or consumer wants, then that kind of fuels the content that you kind of want to speak to. And I think if you can align it with your prospective audience, that's where it's really going to lead to those business results if the results are sales.
Agree.
So get all you get it formatted, you get it done. I think you mentioned early on that, you know, all this is a form of content marketing. And to me, what excites me is all the things that you can do with a single episode in terms of chopping it up. I mean, we do it on video, so you have the audio, the video. I mean, you can accompany it with written word. There's so many things that can be done afterwards that can lead to that business result that you're trying to achieve. What are some of those successful, I guess, content marketing strategies, or how have you seen, essentially once the podcast is done, how is it then, sent to the potential consumers?
Yeah. One of the biggest mistakes a lot of podcasters, whether they're business podcasters or not, make is they produce the audio episode. They release the audio episode on whatever their podcast hosting platform is so that it's distributed out to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all the rest of the usual suspects on there, and that's it. And they're done. And they think that, like, magically, there are people who are just waiting inside of these podcast directories. They're just waiting for their next episode, and that's just not the case. Like the case in most things, right? If you build it, they won't come. I'm sorry. I don't care what you heard on Field of Dreams. They will not come unless you tell them about it. Content marketing means marketing. You've got to let people know that this content exists. And you were right on the money when you talked about how you break up in different things. I call that content repurposing. So once the episode is done, now what do we do? Make an audiogram, which is, you know, the video version of an audio file, since social media hates audio. Whatever, jerks. Yeah, sure, that can work. But also, what about your newsletter? If your business is sitting on 60,000 people, feel free to let them know you've got a podcast and actively encourage them. And even think about using your email as distribution. Here's the crazy thing, Dustin. My podcast, which is only of interest to podcasters, it's called Podcast Pontification. It's me talking about podcasting. So if you're not a podcaster, you're not listening to my show. My shows, I'll make it simplest. More people read my words than listen to my words.
Really?
It's the reality, because I take every episode. My episodes are less than 10 minutes long. And then I take the audio from there, get a transcript, correct the transcript, that goes up on the website. But then I take that transcript and I rewrite literally every word I said every single day. And I make this long form article around 1500 words is what I say out loud in about 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that's about how long the rewritten, and again, every word is rewritten article. Or sometimes I expand, sometimes I remove stuff. That article is read by more eyes than the audio is listened to by ears. And again, I want to remind you, my audience is only podcasters. That's it. But still, more people read my words than listen to my words. And that's whatever reason for, that's a reality. Yeah, I'm audio first. It's audio forward. It's designed to be a podcast that people listen to, and a lot of people do. But a lot more people wind up just reading the content because that works. So to me, that's content repurposing. Make content that's right for whatever medium is out there. If you're shooting video, great. Make sure it's great on video. If you're making audio, make sure it's great on audio. But also, don't forget the written piece. Don't forget the social pieces. Don't forget the email distribution. All of those things. Where are your customers? Where are your prospects? Where is your audience at? Meet them there with content for that particular medium.
That's interesting. I would not suspect the more people would read than listen. I think, in all honesty, how did you feel when you started seeing the numbers, you know, reflect that? Because, I mean, it's podcasts, some audio, and then you start seeing that, wait, I'm doing all this work for the audio, and then people are just reading it. I mean, it could lead one to get discouraged, but I mean, it sounds like you kind of ran with it. And
yeah. And a lot of people probably would get discouraging, but you know, that's the reality. We have to do the things people want us to do. And for me, the thing that takes me the most time in my show is that written piece. So to me, I'm rewarded the fact that it is actually read more. I tell people this all the time, write full on articles for every one of your episodes. And I am universally going, that's just way too much work. I put so much work in my audio ready. And it's like, well, I've listened to your show. You don't put that much work into your audio, but it is still very worth it for you to do the article. I am living proof that this is working really well when you do this, when you actively encourage people to subscribe to your podcast via email, which is weird. Why would you just subscribe to it via email?
Yeah.
Again, my show's for podcasters. More people subscribe to the show via email than are subscribed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the other places. So there.
It's crazy how it all works. You had this grand plan, you know, going to produce audio, people are going to listen to it. But I think, again, it goes back to what is it that your consumers are wanting and doing, and then kind of pivot your strategy to align with that. And I think, the written word, I only saw it as more the SEO side of things. I mean, it helps get ranked and all of that, but it's interesting to hear that, you know, you're getting more readership than the listenership. But even then, it's people, you know, might question, well, why not just do the blog? But the podcast might be that thing that just looks cool and is shiny, that gets the attention, that draws them into your overall sphere of your marketing. Yeah. And I mean, it's easy to say you have a blog. Everyone since 1995 has had a blog. But I mean, right. If you say you have a podcast, all of a sudden it's like, oh, you're a little bit different, even though they're going to consume it as a blog. It's just a thing that drives that awareness and that attention.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and again, it goes back to, am I a podcaster? Sure. But I'm also a blogger? Sure. Am I a writer? Of course. I make video? Yeah. So what do I want to call myself? It kind of doesn't matter what I want to call myself. I'm making content that I want people to consume, and I make it in the medium they want to consume it in. That's the trick.
Yep.
Right there. I don't try and pigeonhole, you know, do the thing that you do and just be where people are.
Yep. No, I agree. That's very well said. And you guys are obviously helping a lot of people with their content marketing strategy, essentially. You know, if they're coming out to you, there's been a lot of discussion on how can we better ourselves in the near future. So knowing that you're helping a lot of businesses amplify their branding, their message, their voice, and all that type of stuff, what are you guys working on internally, not only for yourself personally, but as a business in more of the next 3 to 6 months? And what kind of goals are you guys working on, and what are you looking to accomplish?
Yeah, good question. Things have changed drastically. You know, at the beginning of 2020, didn't really know what was going to happen. Most of my clients are small businesses, and small businesses were disproportionately impacted by the last 12 months. I'm very fortunate in that the impact to me was negligible. All of my clients seemed to manage to get through, at least most of them did. And I even picked up a few new ones along the way. So that was lovely. What we've really decided to do, though, is double down on the much bigger podcasting projects. We're pivoting. I wouldn't say pivoting away from, but when I first got started, it was, hey, if you want to make a podcast, come to me. I'll take care of all the technical stuff and we'll do it. But we've evolved since that time. I've brought on a partner who has 15 years of experience working with the BBC in doing podcasts and storytelling. So she's amazing. It's great to have her on board now. I've started freelancing with a few other audio engineers who are doing more of the rote stuff. I've partnered up with some fantastic finishing artists, if you will, on the end with composers and other things to really make a much higher end product. Because a lot of businesses who've been in podcasting for a while are saying, okay, this was good. We're doing well. We're getting good response, but we can do better. We want to step up to what's happening with, the Inside Trader Joe's podcast. That's the kind of stuff we really want to do moving forward. Let's really step outside of the normalcy that we think podcasting is, which is just interviews. And it's so much more than that. And let's really leverage this to make things that our customers or whoever really truly want to hear. So we're moving into a much more of the full service model Again, our anchor client is obviously SAP, which is a lot of business opportunities in there, but other sorts of enterprise level businesses who want to really invest in podcasting and have creative bravery to make a show that's going to be standout, to put marketing dollars behind that show so that we can really get at the press and attention that it needs, so that it rises not to the top of the charts to be on the top of the charts, but so that tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people or whatever the number is are consuming the content in a way so that their business goals on the other side are met. But that's a much bigger prospect than just what I like to call two dorks with microphones, which is where I started my career, and I totally get it. But the business is moving towards a more professional standard, and we're taking a piece of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's two totally different sales cycles, conversations. It's a big business model move. But yeah. I agree. I think there's tons of opportunities for that enterprise level business, mainly because the big enterprise, they have the big marketing budgets, and that's how they can defeat small business. But I think what more consumers are wanting is a look behind who is behind this brand. Who are these people? What are your stories? And more just they want more humanized brands. And I think that's where the small business can really excel, because they can make the moves. They can do it, come to market quickly. Absolutely. And so I think there's a huge need in the enterprise level. But I think it's tough moving the needle there. But I think...
It really is. And back to the idea about small businesses, something you said earlier, the great thing about podcasting is it's easier to do than all these other platforms. And yes and no, but it's, if you think about the cost involved, and I work with a lot of clients that have done explainer videos in the past, right, where they're spending $7,000 to $10,000 per video to make a series of 2 to 3 minute explainer videos about their really complicated stuff. And those explainer videos sit on their YouTube page no one visits, or it sits on their website that no one visits. And they've really got to push these things out. All right, so let's just say that you did 5 of these things and they cost 10. That's $50,000 that you spend on the explainer videos. And most businesses, yeah, that's what I have to do to that. Reinvest that money next time around into podcasting. We can do a lot for 50 grand to make a really, really great sounding show in podcasting. Go back to the episode level. If you're really thinking about spending $7,000 to $10,000, you can do some really amazing stuff. You can beat every other person in your vertical if that's the level of commitment you have in a podcasting space. So yeah, is it work? Absolutely. But is your competition doing it? Not yet. Not yet. Yep. Strike while they're hot, all those other metaphors. Now's the time to do it, because if you wait, okay, your competition will do it too. So there's definitely benefit in being first mover status. So now's the time to do it.
Yep. No, that couldn't agree more. And even at the enterprise level, I think that there's, outside of just driving sales and new customers, I think there's a huge opportunity to create culture within the organization. If you're doing more of an internal podcast an employee once a week or whatever that looks like, but really telling the stories within each of the departments under the organization, I think would help. Yep. I mean, overall retention, which I think, every business would like to have more retention when it comes to their employees. So I think you're onto something huge going after the enterprise. Like you said, it's, you can try and convince, there's going to be those that get it. And I think, they're going to appreciate the, when they do move forward with you guys.
Absolutely. That's what we're hoping.
Awesome. And before we kind of wrap up, did have a question on the personal note. Saw that you made something called the beer diet.
I did.
What? Yeah. What is that?
So whenever that was, back in 20, a long time ago, I had this crazy. So I'll tell you a shortened version of the story. So I read an article about some guy who over Lent. I'm not a Catholic, but I at least know what Lent is, decided to do nothing but drink beer. I read some ancient text that said that's the thing to do. So he had a friend of his brew him up a brown ale, and he drank that for 40 days, and he lost all this weight. Well, I'm a big fan of craft beer, so I brought this idea to a good friend of mine who happens to be a surgeon and a physician, and I said, I'm thinking about doing this, not for Lent, because I'm not a Catholic, but I'm thinking about doing it for the month of October, where I just drink beer. What do you think? And he says, well, there's not enough protein in beer. You're going to start losing some muscle mass, but it's October. Why not just put some sausage in there? And I said, you're a genius. And so what we decided to do is I'm going to go on this diet. So I went to see him every week. And the entire time, the only food, the only calories went in my body came from either beer or sausage. That was it for the entire month of October. And I saw him ahead of time, and every single week we did blood work all the way through, checked my levels, checked my weight, everything, you know, thinking, oh, if something bad happens, I just stop. I just start going back up. So at the end of those 30 days, or 31 days, I guess it was, I'd lost 15 pounds. My cholesterol cut by a third. My bad cholesterol was down by half. My blood serum levels for my liver enzymes never, ever blipped above baseline. So I was slightly buzzed and slightly hungry for the entire month, but still I came out of it much more healthy than I went into it, just proving the fact that diets are basically a bunch of garbage. If you just reduce the amount of food that goes in, you can pretty much eat whatever you want. You'll lose weight.
That is awesome. I'm going to clip this out, send it to my wife, and let her know I got a new diet that I'm partaking in.
She will have to drive you everywhere you go. So my wife and my son drove me everywhere because, you know, no way I'm going to get behind the wheel. I got on Fox News and a few other places, and the last thing I want is some cop to pull me over and go, I saw you on television last night. Please come to jail with me, sir. No, so no driving for the entire month if you're going
to
do that.
No, that's great. I'll have to check that out a bit more. And as we, you know, this has been great. Lots of good tips, and I've learned quite a bit. And you know, for those even small business or enterprise level organizations, people that are interested in podcasting, it's you know, they want to venture out. Not sure if they should do it. What's, I guess, the biggest piece of advice that you'd have for them?
Don't do it. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, just remember, the amount of effort you put into it is what you're going to get out. I have a saying that is, podcasts tend to get the audience they deserve. So if you are just doing it kind of for fun, then you're going to get a fun-sized audience. But if you're serious and you really invest in it and you've got good reasons for doing so, then great things will come out the other end. This isn't a fad. This isn't a passing thing. Podcasting is here. It's a valid way to communicate with the world, and you probably should be doing it.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. So if you're looking at doing it, reach out to Evo.
Sure. Simpler.media. Get in touch. I'd be happy to chat with you.
Awesome. Any other ways that if someone is interested other than visiting the website, they can get in touch?
So obviously, if you already have a podcast and you want to find a way to up your game and you're curious what the future of podcasting looks like, highly recommend checking out podcastpontifications.com. That's the website and newsletter and article and podcast that I do 4 days a week. I think today was episode 425. Crazy.
Wow.
When you do it for a week, it go up pretty quickly. There, yeah. So Podcast Pontifications, if you want to think about the future of podcasting. It's not a how-to show. It's a why-to show. I give you the questions every working podcaster should be asking. And if you want to follow me on the socials, I occasionally do post things about podcasting, but I'm really only on Twitter, at Evo Terra.
Awesome. I really appreciate it. And I can't stress it enough. If you're a business looking to do it, move forward with it. There's so much marketing that can be done around it that really helps achieve those business results that you're looking for. So, Evo, I really appreciate the time and looking forward to watching you guys grow, especially as you lean into you know, the enterprise level a little bit more.
Thanks, Dustin. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. We'll be right back.